Rogan
As we begin this teaching this morning, please think in this way. For the sake of all sentient beings who are as limitless in number as space is vast in extent, I will achieve the rank of a completely enlightened Buddha who dwells neither in the extreme of existence nor in the extreme of peace. In order to accomplish that, I will exert myself at listening to the Dharma, contemplating its meaning, and meditating upon what I have understood. In that way, turn your mind towards supreme perfect enlightenment, and please listen. Listen.
Hello.
The Dharma to be taught and explained this morning is taken from the 18th chapter of the glorious protector Nagarjuna's fundamental treatise on the middle way called Wisdom. The treatise by the one who was prophesied, foretold by the Buddha himself, the victorious one, as the teacher who would refute all of the complexity and elaboration of the extremes of existence, non-existence, and so forth. This morning we will look at a few verses that bring to completion the 18th chapter, the first portion of which was taught in a previous session.
Yinli Himi Shivatan, Driva Namja Madriba Namdo Medon Tade me, Dene 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 Doshi Savasong.
Awesome. We begin with the ninth set of four lines in a chapter that has 12 sets of four lines. And this ninth says, not known from others, peaceful, not complicated by complexity, without thought, without different meanings. These are the characteristics of suchness.
Then in the capso, Tinija, so Yinli Hiba Meba. Tinija sort of Yinli Himin Hiba, Yinli Hiba Meba. Don't amp them but they sort of Yinli Higre, in the young, don't amp them, don't damn them and tart of what they need.
Thus, in these four lines, different characteristics, defining characteristics of suchness are taught. The first of these is that suchness is not known from others. What this means is that even though from others, one can learn a portion of the meaning of suchness. One can learn something about it. Nevertheless, from others, it is not possible to learn just what it is like to realize ultimate truth directly and unimpededly.
Lassa?
The second characteristic of suchness is that it is peaceful. And here, if one understands peaceful as meaning open, spacious, and relaxed, that will do. Since the nature of suchness is that it is peaceful, and since peaceful means, in this case, spacious, open, and relaxed, then when ultimate truth has been realized, the mind, similarly, like suchness, will be open, spacious, and relaxed. And the person who realizes suchness will likewise be open, spacious, and relaxed. The third characteristic of suchness is that it is not complicated by complexity. This could also be translated not elaborated by elaborations. The complexity that does not complicate suchness is thought. And here what this means is that the actual way of being of things, the abiding, ongoing nature of things, what is always true of them, is something that cannot be complicated or elaborated by names and conventions. It's beyond that. It can't be touched by it. It cannot be disturbed by it. And so, in that sense, no matter what names one might apply to it, no matter what one might think about it, one is not able to complicate suchness itself. The fourth characteristic of suchness is that it is without thought, which means thought is absent. Suchness is beyond thought. The fifth characteristic of suchness is, as it said, without different meanings. And the point of saying that it is without different meanings is that suchness itself is non-differentiation. It is beyond being either single or multiple. Those categories don't apply. So the next line says, these are the characteristics of suchness. And it means these five that have been discussed above tell one what suchness is. The next set of four lines, the tenth of these 12 sets of verses, points out that which is beyond being either permanent or annihilated, and say, what arises in dependence upon something is neither exactly that nor other than that, therefore not annihilated, not permanent. Lesson? This can be put in the form of a syllogism. The syllogism would be stated, the subject, that which arises in dependence upon something, is neither annihilated nor permanent, because one, it is not identical with its cause, And two, it is not something wholly other than its cause. This is a discussion of the relationship between cause and effect, and points out that the cause and the effect are neither truly identical, nor are they wholly other than one another, those being the only two possibilities for truly existent things. What's being said here is that to begin with, the effect or the result is not identical with the cause. If it were identical with its own cause, then the cause would be present at the time of the effect, in which case the cause would have become permanent. That's not possible. The other logical possibility is that the cause and the effect would be other in relation to one another. But if they are other than one another, then they are in fact unrelated to one another. And if they are unrelated to one another, then they don't have the relationship of cause and effect. So that leads to the other extreme, which is the extreme of annihilation.
Deva metto the Josaun tell yin, a conin deva mebare, then a cheaper tagre. Then Dava mare, Anna carere, Namka, Dava chunan and Carva yin, the Jushin tender thoughts on Janawa. Joyang tender thoughts on Janawa, Deva young tender thoughts on Janawa, Jotang Deva Nibuta, Deva Jola to John Deva Latuba, tender Janawa, tender Nangan.
Consider, to make this particular, consider a flower and the seed that serves as the cause of that flower. If the seed and the flower were identical, then when the flower has bloomed, the seed would still be present. In that case, the seed has become a permanent entity, and permanent entities, of course, cannot give rise to anything, so that doesn't make any sense. The second possibility is that the seed and the flower are simply other than one another. If they are other than one another, then there is no relationship between them. And if there's no relationship between them, then the seed cannot be the cause of the flower. So neither of those two possibilities work. What that leaves us with, then, is all causes and all of their results as being like the image of the moon in water reflecting something else. The cause is itself an assembly of dependently related causes and conditions. The result is also an assembly of dependently related causes and conditions. The cause depends upon the result depends upon the cause, and both of them are mere appearances of dependently related dharmas. Moving to the next set of four lines, the 11th in this group of 12, the 11th set of four lines says, the Amrita, that is the teaching of the Buddhas, the protectors of the world, is not one meaning, not different, not annihilated, not permanent.
Zoba Sanje, Marekpa Sanje, Hirab Janama Jeba Zoba Sanje, Seva Ninje Chimbuntar Simben Jikti, Jesinji Namje. Jikting Jangon to Churba Namje, Temba Duter Churba De, Temba Tambe Chu, Droba Namje Dungaje, Ne Rabdu Shevar Seba Duter Churba De, Tunjig Mai Tademe, Tunjig Yamare, Tade Yamare, Chigda Tade Le, Chigda Tade Jutuba Lendevare.
No, sir.
Cheba Mai Tamai, Tanda Cheba Yendo, Tene. Cheba yamare, takwa yamare, takche janta lende apare. Jik dan thade lende apare, takche lende apare.
Lasa. The Tibetan word for Buddha is Sangje, and Sang means to have cleared away, to have cleansed, has a sense of purification. And so the word in Tibetan is understood as meaning the Buddha who has cleared away, who has cleansed away all ignorance, and whose mind, and when it said Je, which means expand or become enriched, it said it has become expanded or enriched by prajna. And in that sense, the mind having cleansed itself of ignorance and been enriched and expanded by prajna, one has become a Buddha. Such a person is regarded as the protector of the world because, having limitless compassion for all sentient beings, the Buddhas appear in the world, turn the wheel of Dharma, and teach, bringing benefit to all beings. The teaching that they give is understood as amrita. Amrita is a magical medicinal substance that will cure illness. And like that magical medicinal substance, so the teaching of the Buddha is a kind of medicine that will pacify, cure the illness of suffering that afflicts all sentient beings. How shall it be regarded? It is not one meaning, it is not different meanings. It is beyond the complexity of being either one meaning or different meanings. It cannot be contained within such kinds of conceptual categories. Then, as before, as in the previous verse, with the discussion of cause and result, so here the Buddha's teaching itself is similarly neither annihilated nor permanent. Awesome.
Dōksāng jē nā mā zōng xī nīntū nām nā sē jō nā rāngsāng jē jī yī xī nē tōngbā mī lē rāb dō jē xī sāba sōng tē.
Namasā.
Dē kāp sā tā tōng tāmbē tēmbā tē trūy bā tham jē tā trā wā rōba dōngā xē wē dō sā tā wē yī nā yāng tē tē kwa chēmbē lō lā kārpā māng bō lā nyam nī zō gō 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 tōk pān thār sē gō gō Tendan talk para majoro, talk by June Chepanjoro, Sana. In a Rang Sanje Jerekin Gaike Zoba Sanje Namazon Hengi, in the Mapa Padang. Sanje Namin Nintu Nintu, the Nintu, drop Jomba Nam Janyang in and Data Saper Jona Yang Rang Sanje Jin the Tumba Mille Rabdujo Rang Sanje Nam Karpa Jas Las of Palas. Sunam je tso sa yore, sunam je tso sa de mulan tabin totan, topan neva latine, dene sanje mazo, nintu nam se sona yang, rangas, muma combat topje, muma sunam je tso sa batan, da meba combat topje, dene rangas sanjo, rangang on the seat.
The final of the 12 verses, sets of verses in this chapter, says, though complete Buddhas do not arise and hearers have been extinguished, the wisdom of solitary realizers arises splendidly in the absence of a teacher. Hearer is a translation for the Sanskrit word shravaka, the Tibetan nyentu. Solitary realizer is a translation for the Sanskrit word pratyeka buddha, the Tibetan word rangsangje or rangjal. This is pointing out the way in which the teaching survives in all kinds of conditions. The ultimate truth taught by the Buddha, demonstrated by the Buddha, is taught in previous verses, free from all elaborations and all complexity. It is like amrita. Still, if one is to practice this in its complete form, the teaching of the Mahayana, the great vehicle, that will require one to practice for many, many aeons, innumerable aeons of practice. And so one might have the qualm thinking, well, in these many, many aeons of practice, suppose I were not able to meet with a completely enlightened Buddha and continue in the journey and achieve further progress on the path. Suppose I were not able to bring realization to its completion in this long journey. what would happen then? Would it mean that the continuum of practice, that the continuum of the teaching itself would be severed? This verse speaks to that and says that even in these many aeons of practice, some of which do not see the appearance of a Buddha who will turn the wheel of Dharma, so even if Buddhas do not arise in that time, and even if in during that period the practitioners known as hearers or shravakas, having listened to the teaching and practiced in accordance with what they have heard, and themselves overcome the foe of the klesha, the distorted, afflicted states of mind, and having actualized their own nirvana, the state of having passed beyond misery, thus having entered into nirvana, having become completely extinguished, so that even if the great teachers and the practitioners known as hearers are not present in the world, nevertheless, as it says, the wisdom of solitary realizers, or Pratyeka Buddha, will still arise. Pratyeka Buddhas, solitary realizers, are those who will extend their practice for as much as 100 aeons, and during those 100 aeons of practice, they will cultivate their prajna, and in particular, they will accumulate merit for many, many aeons. And through the force of the heartfelt aspirational prayers that they make in those many aeons, and through the force of having become accustomed to the meaning of the Dharma, having become familiarized with it, having become used to it, the merit that they have accumulated will allow them to realize selflessness, realize egolessness, even in a time in which no teacher is present and the teaching itself has died out. And in such a time, due to the power of their own previous experience of the Dharma, they will be able to actualize enlightenment themselves, even in the absence of a teacher. Even in the absence of a proper teacher of the Dharma, solitary realizers will survey samsara and become discouraged by it. They will be disheartened by samsara, will be saddened by what they see, which has the sense that they will give birth to the wish to emerge from samsara, which we call the spirit of renunciation. How does this come about? We're talking somewhat in the context of ancient India, where the cemetery, so to speak, which we refer to as charnel grounds, were not very pretty, neat little places, but where corpses were just sort of strewn about with bones and all kinds of stuff just lying there for everybody to see. So it's said that the solitary realizers would wander in the charnel grounds and they would see the corpses and the bones in these places. And seeing them, they would think, well, where does this come from? And they would reflect and realize that these bones and corpses were the result of death, and the death was the result of aging. The aging was the result of birth, and birth was the result, and so on. And they would work their way backwards through what are known as the 12 nidanas, were the 12 branches of dependently related arising, until they had come back to the source of all the misery of samsara, which is the ignorance that blinds one to the truth of reality. In that way, they would discover the ignorance that creates the illusion of a self when in fact there is no self. And having arrived there, that would evoke and provoke the experience again of the selflessness or egolessness to which they had become accustomed previously through the practice of many previous lifetimes. And in realizing that selflessness and reawakening that understanding of selflessness, they would understand selflessness and emptiness, and in so doing would travel to the state of an arhat, one who has overcome the foe of the afflictions. Their way of doing so is that when they enter into meditation, they are at the level of the second of the five paths, known as the path of preparation, or path of connection. The term can be translated either way. And in one session of meditation, they would move. They would move from the path of preparation to the path of no further learning within one simple session of meditation. And having arrived at the path of no further learning, they had become arhats who have destroyed the enemy of the afflictions or kleshas. So this verse speaks about Buddhas and the aeons in which Buddhas do not appear in the world, and hearers, having already completed their path in dependence upon the Buddha's teaching, do not arise newly during this time, as this verse states. Solitary realizers will actualize their own understanding, but it doesn't discuss bodhisattvas here, somewhat conspicuous by their absence. So the teaching of the great vehicle then is something that we need to consider if we're going to understand this verse properly. In the great vehicle, of course, in the Mahayana, the practitioners who are known as bodhisattvas practice in order to bring about the welfare of all sentient beings. And they set their sight on the complete great enlightenment of a Buddha as the best way to bring about the welfare of all sentient beings. And setting their sights on this unrivaled enlightenment, they do not give up in despair, though no matter how long it takes them to accomplish enlightenment. As I said, to practice the path of the Mahayana takes aeons upon aeons upon aeons of practice. It's limitless aeons of practice, and yet in that long period of time, bodhisattvas are never discouraged, they never get tired, they never give up. They continue through the force of their aspirational heartfelt prayers to practice the path that leads to complete enlightenment. They continue the practice of accumulating merit that serves as the cause of achieving complete enlightenment, And they never fall from that path. They never fall to a lesser path. They never give up on the grand project of the Mahayana. They take birth in all sorts of different ways in those many, many aeons. Sometimes they take birth as fish. Sometimes they take birth as turtles. Sometimes they take birth as deer, whatever. And in those many, many different lifetimes, they give away their own flesh and their own blood as the way to further the welfare of others. When they take these births that ordinarily would be regarded as lesser because of being included within the births of animals, it's not a case of having fallen from the path of the Mahayana. It's not a case of having degenerated in their aspiration or in their practice. Rather, they are doing so specifically as a way to accumulate merit, the merit that is needed in order to accomplish the state of complete perfect enlightenment. And so no matter how long it takes them, no matter how long they are traveling in this stream leading toward enlightenment, they never give up in despair and fall to a lesser path. In that way, they take all kinds of birth as a way simply to increase their realization. Thus, in the tradition of the Mahayana or Great Vehicle, there are aspirational prayers in which one offers the heartfelt wish to take upon oneself various types of forms, meaning various types of bodies, and to accomplish the welfare of others by a variety of methods. In accordance with that aspirational prayer, bodhisattvas take birth in a variety of ways, such as those mentioned before in all kinds of animal realms, for instance, as a way to further the welfare of others. And when they take those kinds of birth, it's not a case of having fallen to a lesser path. Rather, they have taken these births as a way to accumulate greater merit and realization and to further the welfare of others. And so they proceed over a long path in a gradual way to the state of complete enlightenment. Also. That then completes the explanation of the 18th chapter of the Protector Nagarjuna's fundamental treatise upon the middle way called Wisdom. This 18th chapter is the examination of self and dharmas. Let's recite together the verses that we've studied this morning.
Not known from others, peaceful, not complicated by complexity, without thought, without different meanings, these are the characteristics of suchness. What arises independent upon something is neither exactly that nor other than that, therefore not annihilated, not permanent. The Amrita, that is the teaching of the Buddhas, the protectors of the world, is not one meaning, not different, not annihilated, not permanent. Though complete Buddhas do not arise and hearers have been extinguished, the wisdom of solitary realizers arises splendidly in the absence of a teacher.
So, Rinpoche would like us to recite all 12 verses from the chapter. If you have the verses from the other day, then we can do them all. How many of you do have them? Some do. So, those of us who have them, we'll go through the whole thing, and everyone else, please join in when you can. Kashila yore, kashila yomare, kashila dungirwa. So, starting from the beginning, if the aggregates were I would arise and disintegrate. If I were other than the aggregates, I would lack the character of the aggregates. If I were not present, where would mine be? Because I and mine are at peace, I and mine are not conceived. One not conceiving, I and mind also is not present. Whoever sees without conceiving, I and mind therefore is not seen.
When the idea that the internal and the external are I and mine has been exhausted, the appropriating causes have been stopped, and because they have been exhausted, birth has been exhausted. Through the exhaustion of karma and klesha, liberation, karma and klesha arise from thoughts. They arise from complexity. Complexity is stopped by emptiness. Designating self and also teaching selfless. The Buddhas also teach neither self nor selfless. That which is to be expressed is turned back because the object upon which the mind operates is turned back, unborn and unstopped like Dharmata and Nirvana. All are authentic, not authentic, authentic and not authentic. The not authentic are not, and the authentic are not. This is what the Buddha taught. Not known from others, peaceful, not complicated by complexity, without thought, without different meanings. These are the characteristics of suchness. What arises in dependence upon something is neither exactly that nor other than that, therefore not annihilated, not permanent. The Amrita, that is the teaching of the Buddhas, the protectors of the world, is not one meaning, not different, not annihilated, not permanent. Though complete Buddhas do not arise and fears have been extinguished, the wisdom of solitary realizes arises explicitly in the absence of a teacher.
Yeah, le rabzi chodem bande the cha ja de je do na kale kale do na tene tum ban ye je tum ya po ha ko re sa bayo gombo zo rup je so na tene pa kya ya gre
nasa. If you will recite this 18th chapter in its entirety, 108 times, then I think that will help you to understand the meaning of emptiness. These are the words of the glorious protector Nagarjuna, and reciting them will help to establish tendencies in you that will lead to the understanding of emptiness.
Lesson.
This chapter is quite probably the very essence of the entire book, the fundamental treatise on the Middle Way called Wisdom, that was composed by Nagarjuna. And because it is the essence of it, obviously it's very important. The song by Milarepa that is known as the profound definitive meaning sung on the snowy range is very much in accord with the meaning taught here in this chapter. So it would be good if we were to sing that now. Why is that? Because in this song sung by Milarepa, the profound definitive meaning, the view that is taught is a view that is beyond something seen and something seeing it. And the meditation is beyond something meditated upon and something meditating upon it. And that way it's very concordant with what Nagarjuna taught.
Emaho.
Emaho.
Alalaho.
Alalaho.
Yeah.
For the mind that masters here, the emptiness gone. In the content seen, not even an atom exists. A seer and seer, refined until they're gone. This way of realizing you, it works quite well. When meditation is clear light river flow, there is no need to confine it to sessions and praise. Meditator and object refined until they're gone.
this high bona meditation in peace quite well. Where you're sure that conduct's work is luminous light, and you're sure that interdependence emptiness. I do.